It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome back to Money for Lunch. Good to have you here. The first Wednesday of 2016. It's just blowing my mind. All right. We have been doing the 13 things. The 13 things mentally strong people don't do. We've been doing one a day. We're here. We are on number three. But, and this, to me, it hit home for me. All right. This is so, I think, so characteristic of a strong person, a strong leader, and that is they don't shy away from change. We have this weird thing about change, right? We tend to want to hold on to the old, even to our detriment. Look at Kodak. Look at Blockbuster. These were leaders in their industry, but they shied away from change. They refused to change, and they have disappeared. So, mentally strong people don't shy away from change. Making changes can be frightening, but shying away from them prevents growth. The longer you wait, the harder it gets. Other people will outgrow you. And I think outgrow you means that in every way possible, spiritually, physically, mentally, financially. We've heard a lot of couples get divorced because they weren't able to deal with change. All right, good stuff there. Let's get our party started. My first guest today is Jeremy Miner. Jeremy Miner is in the top, get this, top 1% of the top 1% of all salespeople in the world. He has achieved the status of being number 44 top income earner in the world of direct sales out of 108 million salespeople. 44 out of 108. He is a multiple seven-figure earner in the sales profession. He recently has launched his company seven-figure sales training that teaches salespeople, business owners, how to break the old model of selling and learn the sales skills set to thrive in the new economy to get into the top 1% of your industry. Get ready to grow your business and take it to the next level. Jeremy Miner, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert Martinez. You know, I'm actually a big fan of your show now. We worked together actually about three and a half years ago, and you know, I didn't know you were even doing a radio show till probably a few months ago, and I started tuning in. I'm like, wow, man, this guy is, I mean, you're always a rock star then when we were working together, but now you're like the rock star. So, you know, everything you just told everybody about me, I'm going to take that as a compliment because my kids say I'm pretty boring. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah, absolutely. we did work together. It was a lot of fun. And I can attest that Jeremy was the number one earner in the company that we worked with together. I can attest that before him and I started working together, his reputation preceded him. And I can attest that what you're going to hear today, what you see is kind of what you get, or what you hear is what you're going to get. He's a very low-key, very humble guy. Unlike a lot of people who make the kind of money that he makes, he's got a fairly level ahead about yourself. So it was always great to work with you and learn from you. And I want to dive into this because you and I, we chatted a little bit last night. And so I want to really dive into this because I know you talk a lot about how selling has really changed and that people's buying behaviors have dramatically shifted over the past few years. So I want to dive into that.
Yeah.
Can you tell everyone listening today what you mean by this change, the shift in behavior in selling?
Well, we really have to ask ourselves, you know, because a lot of times people will say, well, you know, I'm not really in sales. Because if you look, you know, there's a study that just came out a few weeks ago. I was reading it. It said about one out of every nine people in the United States is actually in a sales position, which is true. Sales position meaning we make commissions off products or services that we sell. But I'm going to suggest to you that that number is probably more 8 out of 9 people are actually in sales. And let me get to the point on that. Because what I call something, people who are not getting a commission in sales, I call that non-sales selling, non-sales selling. So whether you're a teacher trying to convince your students to behave in class, or whether you're an attorney, you know, trying to, you know, convince the jury that your client is innocent of charges, or whether you're a politician trying to win over voters, or whether you're, you know, an employee who's trying to convince your boss to give you a raise, or whether you're a business owner on the flip side that's trying to convince your employee base that you need to make slashes to their salaries, we're all in the business of moving others, persuading others. So the question has to be asked is, do consumers of our time, you know, 2015, 2016, do they buy the same way? Do they think the same way? Do they have the same buying behaviors as consumers did 10 years ago, or, you know, 20 years ago back in the 1990s, or even 30 years ago back in the 80s? And most people would say, yeah, today's consumer is obviously buys completely different than they did 20 or 30 or heck, even 10 years ago. But the question is really, why has that changed? Why has the consumer changed? And I'm going to suggest that it's very simple if you really think about it logically. You see, 20 years ago, what was the bridge between, you know, the company and the consumer? It was, of course, the salesperson, right? So the company would send out the representative to, you know, educate the public about their products or their services. And this is really the way the consumer learned about the company and what they offered, right? I mean, you saw TV ads and things like that, but you really learned about it from the salesperson.
Right.
With the power of technology, you know, I mean, it's completely changed the game. I mean, with the power of the internet, social media, it's completely reshaped the sales process in what I call the new world of selling. Because now the consumer knows all about your company. They know all about your products or services. They know all about your price structure. They know about your competitors. They know how long you've been in business. They know everything about you just by doing a Google search on their phone now. They don't even need their computer. So they no longer will be manipulated by a salesperson, because they know they have many other choices to be able to choose the exact same product or service from. Does that make sense?
Total sense. That makes total sense. Absolutely. Yeah. I was coughing. I had to hit the cough button. But absolutely, no. That makes total sense. Think about it. We all have this power. And like you said, we don't even need a computer. You just go to your phone and you can sit there and you know, in some cases, you know more than the salesperson you're talking to.
You do, before they even come out on the appointment. And I'll give you just a brief example. I don't want to bore everybody to death, but let's just look at used cars. Like if you're a salesperson, you worked on a used car dealership, for example. So in the United States today, a prospective customer of let's say a Toyota, like a Camry, they can arm themselves with all manner of information before they even step onto the car dealership, right? I mean, they can go on the internet, they can find, you know, other dealerships who offer the same car within a certain radius of their home, which gives them a wider variety of choices. They can tap into their social media network or visit websites to discover what each dealer's reputation is and whether or not previous customers were happy. They can, I mean, there's so many things, but they can visit online forums to see what current Camry owners feel about the car. They can check Kelley Blue Book or AutoTrader.com to see what Camrys are being sold for, to compare prices. And once they actually see a car they like, they can take that car's VIN number and with a quick online search, find out whether it's been in an accident or had any major repairs. So for the most part in our time, the consumer's protected from unethical sellers. But, you know, if they get any dirty dealing or end up upset from the salesperson, they can simply do more than just, you know, gripe to a friend. I mean, they can go out and tell or post something to a few thousand of their Facebook friends. They can hit up their Twitter followers or, you know, readers of their blog, you know, some of those who will share their posts with their other friends, and it completely undermines the seller's ability to sell. And if you really think about it, just extend the realities of the market for used cars to just about anything that is sold. You with me?
Yes.
It's crazy. I mean, it's changed the game. So for better or for worse, consumers really, we have to understand this as communicators, because consumers view salespeople much like the prototypical used car salesman, right? So whether we're talking about our products or services or company or anything, most consumers think that we have an agenda of putting our own interests in front of theirs, right? I mean, we all think about
absolutely
that, right? Somebody's trying to pitch it. And they think we're going to overpromise or underdeliver or, you know, cherry pick stats to try to prove our point on why they should buy from us. So we go up against this as salespeople, as communicators, every single call that we make, every single day. You know, it's just, when you really think about it, it's just everything has changed. I mean, the ball game is just completely different.
All right, so let me ask you this. Okay, here it is. Okay. And I agree with everything you said. Again,
yeah.
the world has changed in some, you know, you can really say it's become much smaller because we can do so much. So as a salesperson, you know, where do we go from here? I mean, as far as changes, some of the changes or some of the basics haven't changed, or maybe they've changed very little, such as know, like, and trust. It still comes down to trust. If I trust the salesperson I'm working with, then we're going to probably make a purchase from them. However, if I don't trust them, you know, then there's never going to be a sale. So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
What does a salesperson do today to deal with all these changes?
Yeah, and what I'm going to suggest to you just before I answer your question to kind of give it a little bit of a background is really, you know, because of all of these ads from what I call traditional selling or, you know, it's been called the old model from the old sales gurus, because of all these ads that people see on the internet, they see on TV, they hear on the radio, they have salespeople knocking on their door, they have people calling them every single day trying to pitch them something, they have become completely desensitized to these traditional selling techniques. They know that they have other choices out there, so they're not going to be manipulated like they might have been 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Or, you know, you watch like The Wolf on Wall Street where they're in the boiler room making calls and just like being aggressive. People are smarter than that now. They just don't fall for it. So you see sales trainers out there trying to train salespeople like it's 1985, but they're just struggling. The salespeople can't sell. They can't. They get rejected. They get all these rejections. And it's really simple if you think about it. So, like I said, another question is, if the consumers have changed the way they buy things and the way they think, the other question on the flip side for us as communicators is, have we changed? Have we changed, or are we still selling the same way as we did in 2005 or 1985 or 1995 or even the 70s? So, do you think about it. If you're listening on the call right now, do you use the same sales techniques as like the assumptive sale or the feel felt sound when you're trying to overcome somebody's objections or the ABCs of closing, right? Always be closing.
Right.
Or are you doing presentations or do you asking manipulative questions to get a yes answer? Are you still using the trial close or demonstration close? I mean, do all those sales techniques sound familiar to most people? Most people would say yes. I mean, you read about them in business magazines and traditional sales books. You know, they talk about focus on closing the sale, overcome objection, accept rejection as a normal part of selling, or, you know, my favorite one, be enthusiastic about your product and solutions, or it's a numbers game to get to as many no's as you can to get to a yes. And, I'll give you an example of this. You know, I was going through Facebook. Actually, I saw this ad a couple weeks ago as well, and I saw somebody trying to sell his sales training material or something about lead generation as well. And he said, and let me quote what he said here. He said, quote, all I ask, and this company is called the Hardcore Closer. So just imagine a company called Hardcore Closer. You're like, okay, this person's trying to close me, okay, right? I'm going to be defensive. So it already set that up. But he says, quote, all I ask is that you come ready to invest and not waste my time. I have a lot of people to help, and I want to help those who are ready first. So, Bert, basically what he's saying here is you better buy from me when I call you. And this might have worked 30 or 40 years ago, you know, in boiler room communication, like I said, Wolf on Wall Street stuff. But this typical posturing technique, it just doesn't work anymore. I mean, most people would automatically look at this person as being suspicious. right? Trying to scam them, or maybe look at him as just another salesperson trying to stuff his solution down their throat. And then
right off the bat, you know, I would think that you're going to look at this guy and say, look, this guy is obviously, to me, he comes across as a very aggressive, selfish. He's, you know, he's already talking about giving me your money. Don't waste my time. And who's going to deal with that kind of aggression?
Very few people. Now, I'm not saying you can't make sales. You can make a few sales. But I'm going to suggest to you that that way, those techniques, old sales techniques, are causing your sales to be a numbers game by the way you're communicating. And Bert, you know, I read in this article the other day, did you know that according to a recent survey on salespeople in our country, North America, you know, North America, Canada, United States, everywhere, 82% of all salespeople do not feel comfortable using traditional selling techniques. 82%, that's crazy. And they do not feel comfortable with them being used on them. So pretty much 8 out of 10 of everybody listening in today possibly feels uncomfortable with getting these old sales techniques used on them or even using them in sales. And this is what these old sales gurus are still teaching. And why?
Interesting.
You know, why don't they work? Because they go against everything we know about building relationships. I mean, Bert, let's say you were going, you know, go back years before you got married when you were dating your spouse now. If you would have gone back and all you did was focused on you and talked about you and your own agenda and how great you were and blah, 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 you'd probably have a hard time winning over your spouse possibly, right?
Sure, sure.
It's the same thing in sales, which always blows my mind why salespeople think that people are just going to buy from them because they are enthusiastic or excited about what they're selling. It's just crazy to me. Never made any sense.
I love that. I love that. Yes, absolutely. I think you have to be enthusiastic with your product or your service, but you're right. It's not necessarily a sales tool. That should just be natural. That should just be a natural benefit or side benefit because you believe in the product or the service that you're offering, right?
Well, let me give you an example of that, Bert. And I'm going to suggest something to you if you don't mind. I know it's your radio show. Let me just put yourself in the shoes of a consumer. So let's say your car breaks down today, Bert, and you're like, crap, I need to go buy a car. I've got to be somewhere important tomorrow. I've got to drive. I've got to go buy a car. So you're in the market to buy a car now. You go down to the car dealership, and the salesperson comes out, and he's really excited about you being there, right? And he's like, wow, Bert, I'm so glad you're here. We've got some great cars here. We've got the greatest financing deals in town. I'm going to get you the best deal today. Come over here. This red car is just freaking awesome. I love it myself. I drive the car myself. And they start on and on and on about how excited they are that you're there. What would you typically do and how would you react to that person?
Yeah, I'd run away.
You'd run away, right? We do one of two things. We would either throw out objections, right, and try to get rid of the salesperson, or we would just completely withdraw and not answer their emails, texts, or phone calls. One of two things happens when people are overly excited about their services or products. I would suggest that to you for sure.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? It's funny that you bring that. You funny that you bring the story up because we went car shopping not too long ago, and the sales manager or floor manager, can't remember exact title, comes over, and he brings over a salesperson and says, "Hey, this is." Whatever his name was, this is X, and he's one of our top salesperson. He's really good, and he starts telling me, you know, how great of a salesperson this is, person is, and I just looked at both these guys. I'm going, so why do I care?
Exactly. It puts you automatically defensive, right?
Absolutely. Now if you would have said, hey, this is Bob and he's an expert in all of our products and that might have put me more at ease. But he just started talking about how this guy's one of the top salesmen on the floor, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And
so what
bottom
that
line
to do
is nothing to do with me, had nothing that I'm interested in. And so absolutely, I agree with you. Absolutely. Hey, let's do this real quick. Hold on a second, Jeremy. I got to take a quick commercial break. And speaking of money, let's pay some of our bills, and we'll be right back talking with Jeremy Miner about the new models of selling right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Brooke.
And Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All righty, we're back.
Yeah.
We are,
yeah.
Let's talk about this real quick. I want to back up a little bit and talk about one of the myths that you hit that I think is going to be of most interest to people, and that is sales is just a numbers game. And talk about your feelings about this one myth, because it's really it's really taught in every sales school. It's taught in every company.
Sure.
So talk about that a little bit.
Well, I'm going to challenge everybody on that, and I'm going to suggest that selling really can be a numbers game if you wanted to. But in my opinion, as a salesperson, why would you want to call 50 to 100 people just to get a few sales? I mean, to me, that just seems like so much work to have to do that. So I'm going to suggest to you the reason why selling is a numbers game for 99% of salespeople out there is that they're still using the traditional selling techniques, that languaging that I'm going to suggest to everybody, and this would take a long time to train on this, a little bit longer, but it actually triggers sales resistance and it triggers sales pressure on your prospective customers that you're trying to call and persuade to purchase what you're offering. And because it triggers that sales pressure, because it triggers that sales resistance, it's going to cause most of them to throw out objections and reject what you're offering, even if it can help them. So I would suggest you selling is a numbers game because you can keep doing that. But I'm going to also say that in the new world of selling, and we haven't really trained on this, but with trust really being at its lowest point than it's ever been in the marketplace, which is a whole other discussion, it's not really any longer about how many calls you're making or how many contacts you reach, okay? That's just all bogus. It's about the quality of those conversations and how deep you're going into those conversations by asking very highly skilled questions that brings out your prospect's emotional side rather than you trying to present the logical solution side. And so for a salesperson, a communicator, to get up to that $250,000 a year range or $500,000 yearly range or over $1 million of income selling exactly what they're selling now, it's really on how good you are at creating trust, okay? How good you are at making an emotional connection in the conversation so you can quickly find out if you can actually help that person or not. Because I train salespeople to always have this mindset. When you call a prospect, instead of focusing on you and your own agenda of you making the sale, which is what everybody does, instead focus on whether there's a sale to be made in the first place. And when you're only there, you're only focusing on them and their world rather than you and your world, do you think the prospect actually picks up that you're actually there to help them and not try to close and sell them?
Absolutely.
100%
of
the time. Yeah,
right.
100% of the time. So when they feel that you're only focused on their world and what they're looking for instead of you focusing on your world and you trying to close them, do you think they're going to be more open to seeing what your solution or what your offering actually is? 100%.
Absolutely.
And so you take out any sales resistance, you take out the sales pressure that I'm going to suggest once again is caused by these old traditional selling techniques for sure. And can I, how much time do we actually have on here, Bert? I don't want to take everybody's time.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's just talk about that because it kind of give you a preface on this. Because if you really think about, okay, so consumers buy differently, but salespeople still sell the same way. I mean, we've all kind of established that. And it's really easy to understand why. I mean, Bert, if you thought about it, what is the age of the average sales training guru that you bought from and audio CDs and have attended seminars? What do you think their average age would be?
I don't know. It's got to be the guys that I grew up with who I still buy from, you figure they got to be in their average age 60.
Yeah, they're probably in their 60s, their 70s. A
65
lot of them have already
maybe.
Passed. Yeah, I mean, a lot of them that are still out there that have their books for sale have passed away 20 years ago. And that's by all means, I'm not demeaning that at all. I mean, these men were great in their generation. But what generation did these men learn how to sell? Well, they learned how to sell in the 1960s, in the 1970s, in the 1980s. But the consumer was completely different in the 60s, 70s, and 80s than they probably are now, right? And I'll
Absolutely.
Give you an example. Have you ever heard of Joe Girard?
Joe Girard. Man, that sounds familiar.
Yeah,
very
popular sales trainer. I think he's in his late 70s, early 80s. But he has a book that sold 2 million copies. I definitely give him props. It's called How to Sell Anything to Anybody. And he says in the book that he's the world's greatest sales person in the world. And he actually holds the Guinness Book of World Records for most car sales sold in a year. Get this, all the way back in 1963. Okay, so 1963 holds this record. Consumers were probably a little bit different. And I'll give you just an example of one of his techniques. He says in his book, I'm just looking at his book now, he says, if prospects mention that they've recently been on vacation somewhere, I will tell them I've been there too, because wherever that guy's been, I've also been, even if I've never heard of the place, is what he says. So a lot of people, he says, you know, they think they know a lot about me because I know a lot about them. If they said they've been to Yellowstone National Park, I say I've been to National Park. If they say I've fished for salmon near Traverse City, Michigan, I say I've fished for salmon near Traverse City, Michigan, okay? And these techniques, I mean, do we really think that these type of sales techniques don't cause our customers to really not trust us and look at us in a negative way and throw out objections? Of course they do, right?
Right.
And to me, it's funny because that Joe Girard found this many clueless people to become the world's greatest salesperson, and then he remains out there teaching salespeople these same techniques. It might actually seem to validate that this type of selling actually works. But there's one thing that we should all know about Joe Girard, the world's greatest salesperson, Bert, and that is he hasn't actually sold a car since 1977. He quit the business almost 40 years ago to go out and teach these selling techniques. And, you know, Girard's selling techniques might have worked in the mid-1970s. Of course they worked. But in our time, in 2015 and 2016, it's like they have the whiff of old dusty boxes that are forgotten in the attic. Right?
Right. Right. Here's the other thing is that why would you want to be trained by a person who's telling you to lie?
Of course.
That to me is a perfect example of somebody who, in my opinion, is not a good salesperson, who is going to use every trick, every stratagem to get it over on his customer. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why salespeople have they have a negative stereotype about them because of these type of techniques, right? High pressure, high sales pressure that just don't really work in the new world of selling. You know, and more broadly, his worldview, and I'm going to say most of the old sales gurus' worldviews, is these selling techniques, they resemble one of those old movies in which, like a soldier stuck on a remote island continues fighting because he hasn't got the word that the war's actually ended. You know, things have changed, but they're still out there teaching it like nothing's ever happened. It's just mind-boggling to me, crazy.
No, it is. It is. And what's interesting is, like you said, the fact that so many people are being duped by it. All right, so let's talk about this. Let's get into some nitty-gritty here. How...
Sure.
Would you train your salesperson who are representing Jeremy Miner, to go out there and sell Jeremy Miner or sell XYZ or whatever? How would you see that structured?
Yeah, and I appreciate the question. Yeah, see, in my sales training company, we teach people how to break this old way of thinking, like this old model of selling, and really switch to the new model of selling. And I'll go over that. So if you really – I studied behavioral science in college. I never got my degree. I dropped out, but I did study behavioral science. And behavioral scientists have actually proven that in communicating with others, there's three forms of communication, okay? Number one, we're the least persuasive. So we're the least persuasive when we tell people things. or attempt to dominate them. Present, we do a sales pitch, we try to tell our story, and we try to persuade. So according to behavioral science, it's actually the least persuasive way to persuade somebody, okay? Just crazy. Number two, we're more persuasive when we attempt to interact and discover from each other. That would be like a, maybe a discussion or some type of small debate. But three, the third form of selling that, that science, you know, behavioral science has proven is that we're more persuasive when we allow others to persuade themselves. So we're more persuasive when we allow others to persuade themselves. That's called dialogue, right? And so this is what we teach. So dialogue is an open form of communication that allows you, the communicator, to receive the answers that you need, to really find out the core essence of who your prospect actually is, what their problems are, if any, more importantly than that, what's caused those problems, and even the most important, how those problems are affecting them and their world, and whether or not you can actually help them, okay? And when we have an open dialogue, it compels our prospects to listen to what we're actually listening to. Are you with me on that?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's what we do because, I mean, if you really look at the traditional sales model, it's all about what? It's about getting the sale at the expense of the human relationship with the potential customer. It's the me against the customer mentality. It's like when I first started in sales in 2000, my sales manager is like he was drumming us up to go out to war every day against our prospects, trying to manipulate them and win them over to the sale, which it goes completely against building relationships, right?
Sure. Well, okay. So let me kind of recap it a little bit. Again, when I think of the old sales model, or I guess you could even say the current sales model for lack of any other term, and that is, you know, you find a prospect and you kind of throw up all over them, right? You gush information at them, right? As you said, it's the first level, the least persuasive level of communication, right? You're just saying, hey, look at my product. It's great. It's been around 100 years. It's got bells. It's got whistles. Mm-hmm. Isn't it fantastic? And then with the most persuasive, the third way that you're talking about, where you have this dialogue, you're really you're really interacting with the client, and you correct me if I'm wrong, you're going to ask questions to see if the product should even be offered to the client.
Yeah, and Bert, that's a good point. I mean, I've gotten to the end of, you know, taking them through what I call the engagement process in the new model of selling, and I've gotten to the point where I'm, you know, John, based on what you've told me here, what I'm doing is probably not going to work for you. But what I would suggest to you is that you talk to this person over here that can actually help you with what you're looking for. And I'm going to tell you, when you do that, people look at you and they're like, oh my gosh, like this guy is the man. And I've probably got 30 referrals from that same company because I told them based on what they were looking for, I couldn't help them. Right, because I'm there to help other people solve their problems. I'm not focused on my own agenda of making the sale. And because I'm not focused on that, they see that and they look at me as what I teach salespeople how to become the trusted authority in their marketplace, right? Instead of the dreaded salesperson. So by these training techniques, by learning how to do effective dialogue, which is a process, by learning those skills, your prospects will start looking at you as a trusted advisor or the trusted authority rather than the dreaded salesperson that's there just to try to stuff their solution down their throat. And so they treat you completely different. I mean, they look at you like you're a god or something. I mean, it's kind of crazy. They respect you. They honor you. You never have to chase them anymore. They're the ones chasing you. And that those type of skill sets, they get you from making $80,000 a year or even $150,000 a year to getting you up to $300,000 a year, $500,000 a year, over $1 million a year selling the exact same product. Like in my company that I was with, you know, I made over $2 million a year in sales commissions. The average salesperson in my industry made about $25,000. So night and day difference. You look at all the training out there. I mean, there's so much sales training out there. But the average salesperson in North America, I just read a survey in July of 2015, guess how much the average salesperson makes in North America, Bert? $41,000. Okay. I answered it for you. $41,000.
Which is a little bit. I was gonna think it was gonna be closer to, you know, 60, but wow, $40,000 a year.
$41,347. I'm looking at it right now. You can actually live in Rhode Island and be on welfare and actually make more than the average salesperson in America. I'm serious. It's just mind-boggling to me, and there's so much sales training out there that people are going through. And when I see them go through these old techniques that, you know, salespeople used in the 60s and 70s and 80s, thinking that they're going to work in our time, I feel bad. I'm just like, wow, they are definitely going to be calling leads all the time, working 10, 12, 14 hours a day, barely to get by, when they don't have to. They really don't have to. They just don't know that there's other forms of communication out there that actually work.
Yeah. Now, but let me ask you this. Let's talk about, okay, let's say that the communication is one side of that coin. The other side has to do, I think, with the salesperson's self-image, right? Mm-hmm. Because, and you correct me if I'm wrong, did you go from making, you know, whatever average money? Because I know you had a corporate background and then you got into sales.
Sure.
But you correct me if I'm wrong. Were you able to go from, hey, I'm making X amount of dollars, to now I'm going to make $2 million a year? Was that a fairly easy shift for you, or did it take some training on your side as well?
Well, I'm going to answer that in two parts. It was an easy shift for me once I started learning. I had two very important mentors in my life. I'm not going to give you their names because I don't know if they want to, but Kevin from New York City, actually, and then a good friend of mine, Michael, from British Columbia, Canada, that really taught me the new model of selling. That was back in 2005, 2006, in that area. Like I said, I started in sales in about the year 2000, and I studied all the gurus. I started, you know, Brian Tracy, Tom Hopkins, Zig Ziglar, I mean, all the gurus you can think of. Sure. And I got up to making a few $100,000 a year using those techniques, but I never could get past that. No matter how many more hours I worked, no matter how many more seminars I went to, I just couldn't break that $200,000-$250,000 range. I just knew there had to be a better way. I'm like, wow, I'm going through so many people. I'm calling 20 people to make one or two sales. I want to learn how to call 20 people and make 15 sales. Right. There has to be something out there. So when I got a hold of these mentors and they taught me, you know, really the new model of selling and just to get rid of these old techniques, my income the next year went from $250,000 the next year to $750,000. So tripled my income selling the same thing. The next year, I think it went close to $1 million. And then after that, $1.2 million. And then about 4 years ago, over $2 million a year. And selling the same thing. You know,
that's so amazing.
It's just, to me, it's not about motivation. I mean, motivation is good. Like I go to personal development events. You know, I love Tony Robbins. I've never been to one of his events, but I've read a lot of his stuff. And, you know, my wife has been to his event and stuff. And I love Tony Robbins and all these personal development people. But the issue is that salespeople go and they get pumped up and excited, right? But they get back on the phone the next day and they keep using these old traditional selling techniques and they get rejected and rejected and rejected. And that motivation tends to wear off, doesn't it?
Sure. Well, and you know what? And the thing about it is, look, you're obviously a motivated individual. I would say most of our listeners are motivated individuals because they have their own company. They're running the department. They're the president of the company. Most of us are already motivated. I don't know anybody that is not motivated. And so getting more motivated isn't the answer. It's getting better tools.
Yeah, it's understanding the right skill sets for the world that we live in today, not the world we lived in 10 years ago. You know, and a big shift, we don't have a lot of time to go through this, but a big shift really took place when everything crumbled in 2008, you know, when the stock market collapsed, when the big banks failed, when, you know, trust was really thrown out the window. Like, you invested all your money with Lehman Brothers and they just collapsed overnight. You're like, geez, if I invest my money with one of the biggest banks in the world and they're gone, who can I trust, right?
Right,
so
right.
As I've talked to salespeople, and CEOs of companies, they always, and even politicians, you know, I'm working with, you know, some people doing that, they always tell me that 2008, like, things changed, right? Like, the same techniques they were using, like, their salespeople were selling, all of a sudden, like in 2008, they just didn't work anymore. Sales were down by 50%. And, you know, they blame it on the economy. But in my business, I had like tripled my business the next year in the same economy because of the way I was communicating. So people in my industry, there were other top incomers that made $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 a year. 2008 happened, things collapsed. They go down to $80,000 a year or $100,000 a year because they were still communicating to a more skeptical audience. You know, I always tell people,
sure,
yesterday's trust has become today's skepticism. Our buyers are more skeptical than they have ever been in the history of the market. It's from TV, it's from disinvitation from all these people trying to sell them something all the time. So they are skeptical no matter what we do. So if we learn, what we teach salespeople is we teach them how to avoid the languaging or the wording that actually triggers their prospects to have that sales resistance, that triggers sales pressure that leads them to lose their sales, you know, to get rejected so much. Once you learn how to take out that wording and language that's causing people to reject you, sales just opens wide up. You know, companies or sales just explode through the roof calling the same people because now they have the actual skill sets that actually work in the new world of selling.
I love it.
Pretty boring stuff, you know.
Well, I think that most people would find it very, very exciting because the reality is, as you said in the very beginning of the show, that we're all in selling. You know, the reason that you and I are both married is because we convinced, persuaded, sold our spouses that we were worth marrying, right?
Sure,
the reason, you know, and so whether you're not a what do you call it, a traditional salesperson, let's say you're a plastic surgeon or a plumber or, you know, you name it, you still have to have these correct skill sets, these communication skill sets in order to build that trust and put people at ease.
Yeah.
And as we've discussed today, get people to convince themselves that you have the solution that they're looking for.
Yeah. And like I said earlier in your show, I call that non-sales selling. Non-sales selling. You're not collecting a commission. You're moving. We are all in the business of moving others. Right. If we go outside and say, my son hasn't done his homework, I'm trying to persuade him to do his homework. We're moving people. We're persuading people to do things that we want them to do. So like I said, if you're a politician trying to win over voters, you're in non-sales selling. Right. You're trying to persuade people to come over to your point of view. If you're an attorney trying to convince a judge to let your client go, you are trying to move the judge to persuade him to let your client go. In everything you can think of, we are all in the business of moving other people, period.
And we're going to end on that note. We're out of time. Jeremy Miner, fantastic, fantastic information. I love that. We're all in the business of moving people, and that's really it. Isn't that what leadership's all about? Whether it's your children and your spouse, your coworker, your partner, your employees, we're all in the business of moving people or influencing people. Jeremy Miner, thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to have you back again, my friend.
Hey, Bert, it was an honor to be on your show, and I look forward to tuning in. And I'm really proud of you, man. This show is a hit, and I've learned a lot from some of your other guests. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you so much. Good stuff there from Jeremy Miner. The top 1% of the top 1% of all salespeople in the world, and you can tell why. There's no fluff, there's no hype. It's just this communication skill set that allows people to really make the best decision for them using your solution. Isn't that the best way to sell? Anyway, you can find out more about Jeremy Miner at 7figuresalestraining.com, 7figuresalestraining.com, and he's going to be launching that website fairly soon, so you guys can go over there and add yourself to the early bird list, find out what's happening with Jeremy Miner. As always, we're excited to have you here. As always, we are grateful that you guys make our show the success that it is. We're grateful for you guys tuning in. We're grateful for your show suggestion, your guest suggestion. Anytime you want to hit me up on Facebook or Twitter, you can hit me up via Bert Martinez. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.